Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. At the 2010 Mark Twain Awards, Steve Martin had this to say about the night's honoree, comedian, writer, and actress Tina Fey.
Isn't it refreshing to find a female comedian who's both really good and funny looking? Excuse me, that should have read really funny and good looking. Sorry.
His observation illustrates a long-held belief that's been reinforced on both stage and screen. A woman can be either funny or beautiful, but not both. Coming up, we'll hear from comedian and NPR host Ophira Eisenberg. Joining us now is the author of a new book called Pretty Funny, Women Comedians and Body Politics. Ohio State University Women's Studies Professor Linda Mishievsky. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Linda, in a recent interview, you said that the two most famous feminists in America are comedians. Do you think most Americans would know immediately who you are talking about?
I believe so. And it's one of the reasons that I wrote the book and thought this needs to be talked about more. People were so happy about Amy Poehler and Tina Fey at the Golden Globes that they demanded that they come back again for the second year, and then people were disappointed that they weren't on air enough. That's really pretty outrageous, and it's not something that we would have thought possible 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And what's really interesting about these two comedians, they're really good. I mean, people like them because they're good. They don't like them because they're feminists. They just happen to think that a lot of sexism is very funny, and they're willing to call people out on it. I think it's interesting that one of the most famous skits from Saturday Night Live is the one that where they together did the imitations of Hillary Clinton and Amy Poehler.
Jane Pauley.
Sarah
Palin and
Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And they were making fun of the way that sexism in the media had done a disservice for both of them. And when Tina Fey writes about that in Bossy Pants, she says it was one of her favorite skits of all time. She was so proud to be able to do that. And she said, you know what? She said, it was a little bit like putting spinach in the brownies. People got a dose of feminism and they didn't know it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about women and comedy and how the day was when you couldn't be pretty and funny. My guest is Linda Mishievsky. She's an OSU Women's Studies professor and author of a new book called Pretty Funny, Women Comedians and Body Politics. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. The real break out here appears to be what is what has long been thought to be unfunny, which is feminism itself.
Sure.
Is now funny without being diminishing.
Right. I think what people are seeing is that a lot of the things that these comedians are making fun of are things that are genuinely funny. So, for example, if you go online and look at Amy Schumer's Oh Nutters parody, it's a parody of Hooters. And what she's saying is that women's bodies have been treated like this traditionally, and nobody raises an eyebrow about it. So in the Oh Nutters parody, she has a bar where the men are the ones who are in very skimpy little clothes. They're the ones who jump up on the bar to dance. It's hilarious. When looked at that way, it makes people bond together and say, you know, that really is outrageous. And I think that's where the political push comes in, because there's a bonding quality to comedy. If you can make people laugh together, you've gotten them on your side. And of course, that's also why comedy is so dangerous. Think about sexist jokes or homophobic jokes or racist jokes. I mean, they have a punch, because if you're at a party, somebody makes one of these wisecracks, if you don't laugh, you're the one who doesn't have a sense of humor. You're the one that's the outsider there. But also the person who's making the joke is saying, whoa, you know, we know, you know, we're bonded together against this other group that is obviously contemptuous in some way. So, I mean, it's the reason comedy is this double-edged thing. It can be very dangerous, but because it's a bonding device, it can also do really interesting things. And of course, we're seeing that kind of political comedy that's very popular with The Colbert Show and The Daily Show. That's where my students get their news. That's how they find out what's happening in the world. And it works. I mean, it's a very persuasive way to make people rethink things or to put things in a different light.
How big of a deal is comedy now? So you're saying that, you know, we've got the two most famous feminists in America, you're saying, are comedians, and at a time when comedy seems bigger than ever.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's because more people are able to get into the act than had been previously possible. So, you know, for example, I'm thinking about Issa Rae, who's, you know, very talented comic who went online with her online series, The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl. And, you know, she may not have had a shot. And instead, she is nationally famous. She's gotten an option now for a television show based on this. It's possible for more people to do more because we have more media. So I think that's a good thing.
Is there still some residual perceived dichotomy between pretty and funny? Tina Fey's been on the cover of Vogue. She does ads for Garnier. How does this split manifest itself now, or is it dissolved?
Well, it's still an issue. And I think if you think about the Tina Fey 30 Rock episode that was actually a reference to Olivia Munn's controversy on The Daily Show. Okay, so this what happened was Olivia Munn, a comic, was on The Daily Show, and she was on The Daily Show because The Daily Show had gotten a lot of criticism for not having women comedians. When Munn made her appearance there, there was this huge outrage that said, hey, she's on there only because she's pretty. She really isn't very funny. There are a lot of much funnier comedians out there. Tina Fey took that up in 30 Rock and did a whole episode about it. But this is pretty recent. And Tina Fey herself has said this is a pretty thorny issue. And it's a thorny issue because if a woman is very pretty, there's going to be a suspicion, okay, about, well, is she really funny? It's an issue that doesn't happen with men at all, because funny-looking male comedians can do anything. They traditionally have been able to do anything. You know, if you're older, you can remember Buster Keaton, who always got the girl. Think about what Buster Keaton looked like. Or more recently, think about Woody Allen doing romantic comedy. And there was never a question that, yeah, he could be funny and he could get the girl. For a woman to be both funny and pretty, oh my gosh, I think there's a long history here, and I don't think we're quite over that history yet.
But let's make the distinction between film and television and stand-up. Women who write their own material, they're getting up in front, you know, the ones that, you know, the old, I don't know if it was first or second, but as far as, I think it was second wave feminism, the Phyllis Dillers, that sort of thing, versus what we have now, and how they distinguish themselves from Lucille Ball.
Okay, that's a really, really good question. Traditionally, when we think about women and comedy, most people think about the movies and romantic comedy, or they think about people like Lucille Ball, who was not herself a comedian. She had really good comic timing. She worked really, really hard to make sure that she got every line right and every gesture right. But she herself wasn't a funny person. You couldn't put her on a talk show and she wouldn't say funny things the way that Tina Fey or Ellen DeGeneres or Wanda Sykes would. So when we look at movies and also a lot of sitcoms, we're really seeing women with good comic timing who had to be attractive. That was the main thing. They had to be good looking to get the part. Now, television has always been much more generous with women overall. I mean, think about something like Murder, She Wrote, you know, where there was an older woman who would not have done well in movies, but who was able to do a very long running series. So in television, you've had people like Roseanne, for example, who were able to, you know, to come up with their own sitcoms. We find someone like Ellen DeGeneres, who has done so well on television, has done so well specifically in talk shows where we don't bother with a narrative at all. There's no storyline there. This is a matter of her being funny. So television has a very, very different kind of history. Then when you get into stand-up, that's a different thing altogether, because there you have women who may or may not make it to TV or make it to movies, but they are writing their own stuff, and while they are really out there on the front lines getting heckled, and in
still
fact,
or back oh, in the day?
Well, here's the thing. Heckling is a tradition in stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's the heckler.
Right.
He's always there.
Right. And in fact, Laura has a thing about how to handle a heckler.
A guest coming up.
A guest mm-hmm. coming up, right, exactly. So heckling is a tradition in stand-up comedy. I would like later to hear from Laura about how women get heckled in a different way from men. But you're talking here about women who are really doing the really hard work of getting up there in front of a crowd. Traditionally, if a woman is an entertainer and she's standing up on stage, she's supposed to be good looking. That's the expectation. Okay, so there's some kind of an adjustment that has to happen for women comics as opposed to the guys who... It doesn't matter what they look like. It just doesn't. If they're funny looking, you know, that may be an advantage in a way that it's very rare for a woman to have an advantage being funny looking.
When did that start to change? Where do you see the cusp of this 21st century feminism?
Here's what I think. There's been a long tradition of women making fun of the idea of prettiness. Okay, and that begins with Mae West. It begins with Fanny Bryce, you know, making fun of the Ziegfeld girls. That's a very, very long tradition. That tradition is really being continued with people like Tina Fey, who the cover of Bossy Pants is, you know, a very funny picture of her kind of morphing into this big guy, and it's a joke about what a feminist looks like. So there's kind of a long tradition, but I do think the women's movement really had an impact. Okay, so you know, think about Lily Tomlin's comedy that we know was always on the cusp, and then think about Roseanne, who was able to kind of break out there and doing her send up of the domestic goddess. So certainly the women's movement made an impact, and you begin to see that happening in the 90s.
I think one of my favorite segments from 30 Rock was the Pretty Baby segment, where she has a new writer on the show who does this pretty baby thing, and it's she acts like a baby.
Sexy baby. And they get into this really interesting debate where the Tina Fey character she trots her out to the statue of Eleanor Roosevelt in Central Park and says, "Here is Eleanor Roosevelt, who appeared on my lunchbox and who was also a spokesperson for women. And we think that you can't do this kind of comedy." And this woman saying, "Hey, I make a living from this. People are paying for this, and our feminists going to be the ones who police comedy?" It was a very tricky issue. And what I loved about that segment was that the Liz Lemon character says, "Look, I have a stake in how women are represented on TV." And that was a very serious moment in that episode. And the episode doesn't end in a very resolved way. It was one of those episodes that you could see the controversy ongoing. You know, you could see that there's a real kind of a sticking point here. If the feminists don't want to be the ones going around saying, "You can't do that kind of comedy," that really would be a very problematic thing.
My guest is Linda Michiewski. She's an OSU women's studies professor. She's written a new book called Pretty Funny, Women Comedians and Body Politics. That's what we're talking about today, is the 21st century female comedians and the dichotomy, or how they're starting to merge the whole idea of pretty, attractive, feminine, and feminism on the stage as comedic actors and stand-up comedians. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. That's the jazz standard, My Funny Valentine. The word funny here does not refer to the singer's hilarious sweetheart, but to one whose face will never grace the cover of a magazine, more funny-looking than funny, ha-ha. Today we're talking about how those two assets, humor and good looks, intersect for some of the most successful comedians ever, who happen to be women. Still with us is OSU professor Linda Michiewski. She is the author of a new book called Pretty Funny, Women Comedians and Body Politics. And joining us now by phone is stand-up comedian, author, and host of NPR's Ask Me Another, Ophira Eisenberg. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Ophira, when did you start getting famous and making a lot of public appearances? Or when you did you start to worry about being beautiful in a way you hadn't before?
I think actually the trajectory for me went in the other way. When I started stand-up comedy, which now is about almost 15 years ago, I started in Toronto, and there wasn't a lot of other female stand-up comics at the time. And I was made very self-conscious about how I looked on stage, what people thought of me. I wasn't very angry, and that seemed also maybe potentially a problem because all of these things were, were actually subversive because I was just a woman who was trying to wear nice clothes and look nice and tell some jokes on stage.
So
as things increased, it got better.
Linda, what about that, the isolation piece of this?
Oh, sure. It's still, even though we have many more women in stand-up than we used to, they are still the minority. And it's wonderful that it's no longer remarkable. People don't gasp, but there is still. well, think about that Steve Martin joke. Like, oh my gosh, how unusual it is. How can we get over the fact that Tina Fey is good-looking and funny? You know, his joke about that, you know, that wasn't that long ago.
I didn't think it was that funny. Ophira, you know what we're talking about with Steve Martin?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
What did you make of that?
Well, you know, it's so repetitive. I've heard versions of that just to my face over the years in so many ways. And it's such a common sentiment that I was a little surprised when I was like, oh, that was more recent than I expected it. But, you know, you would get this thing, too, where you go on stage, and it's old. You could talk to a lot of female comics about this on the road. You're on stage, and you have to deal with this idea that if there's a couple in front of you and the man starts laughing, the woman who is his wife or girlfriend might not like that because now she feels threatened. But you kind of have to get her on your side. It's all very complicated sometimes what goes on with your relationship to these people in the audience, just based on being a woman on stage. And it's that authority thing that I know you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, I don't think men get up there and they're like, wow, I hope the woman likes me, because if the woman likes me, the guy will think I'm cool. It's very complicated.
I want to play a clip of your stand-up that I think is relevant. This is from an appearance you made on Late Night with Craig Ferguson last year, and it's about online dating.
Sure.
But I did a lot of dating online. I was on this one site where you put up a picture, you write a profile, and then you were supposed to put a couple words under your picture, like a tagline, to get people interested in checking you out. And I did not know how to describe myself in a couple of words. I'm like, I'm in my 30s. I've kind of been around the block, you know. What do I put? So finally I just put, as is.
This bit is really about accepting yourself but still wanting to be liked by other people, right? Is that something you think about as a performer?
Yeah, I do a lot. I mean, again, it's taken a long time to get to the point, but you do get, I think you get to a point, and it's a wonderful feeling, where you just go, you know what? It's too late to create a brand new person. I am who I am. I'm going to go out there, and I've written the material that I have, and I am the person that I am, and if they like it, great, and if they don't, what am I going to do? You know, and you just have to get to that point where you're like, here's what it is, and I think it's, I worked really hard on it, so can't make much change.
Linda, the folks that you talked about, the women you talked about in Pretty Funny, they all write their own material, mostly.
Right, right.
And we talked a little bit about that distinction between film and TV and stand-ups, but how you're putting yourself out there in more ways than one.
Oh, good heavens, yeah. A lot of what they do is autobiographical. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I think stand-up comics use the material of their lives. The funniest, the best, use the material of their lives and use it as a kind of the beginning to make bigger observations about human quirkiness and kind of the funniness of human existence. But certainly there is an autobiographical thing there. And there is, I think Ophira used an interesting word there. She said there's an authority. You become the authority to to make this kind of a joke. And Lily Tomlin has actually talked about that. She talks about it as power. She says to get up there and make somebody laugh is powerful. It's a powerful thing. And therefore, it's a different dynamic for women than for men. And that power has all kinds of gender implications. And, you know, Athira mentioned about, you know, playing to the couple and, you know, the woman's reaction as opposed to the man's reaction. So I think that's what makes this so interesting.
Yeah, lots of... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, too, you know, a lot of guys would always joke that they're like, oh, I got into stand-up comedy to get girlfriends, like to get women, because, you know, they're up there and to make someone laugh is so powerful, and it's very attractive. And I think a lot of women are like, oh, yeah, if I get up on stage, it's guaranteed I will not get a date after the show. Because it is not seen in the same way.
I think the thing that you brought up, Ophira, and that you reinforced, Linda, about couples in the audience, I sense and I seem to see a lot more male comedians poking fun at couples than I do female comedians. You know how they do that? They kind of give them a hard time, and I don't see women doing that as much.
Yeah, it's very delicate. I've never actually thought about it myself as being divided like that. I would have to take notice, but you might definitely be onto something, because it is getting so much better. It is radically so much better. But I used to feel in the beginning that I really needed a couple minutes to convince the audience that it was going to be okay.
That this is going to be okay in what way? This is really going to be funny.
You're going to trust me, and you're going to listen, and you're going to have a good time. And I promise you that, you know, this is okay. We're not doing it might seem groundbreaking, but, you know, we're here to have a good time, and I can handle it.
Sarah Silverman, she's famous Jewish comedian. There are a lot of them, and you both grew up in a very un-Jewish setting. Is there something inherently funny about being the underdog?
I think you have to have a little bit of an outsider perspective. I think that is one of the real sort of backbones of stand-up, because the outside perspective allows you to look in at the mainstream or whatever is considered the most normal with a critical point of view and see it from a different standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I feel like a lot of comedy will come from. And the tension, too, just the tension of being part of something but not quite part of something, is allows you to say things that maybe other people are thinking but haven't had the ability to express because they're too inside of it.
And Silverman, she also does very explicit sexual material. You know, Jerry Lewis is well known for his comments about comedy, saying it's too aggressive for women to do it justice. Sarah doesn't seem to be listening to him. Do you think some female comedians feel like they have to prove that they can be just as risque as men, Ophira?
I think that is part of the whole... I wouldn't say prove, but, you know, for especially a pretty woman, or actually women of any size, but there's a pretty woman, think of Sarah Silverman, talking about sex in a very aggressive, explicit manner, that creates the kind of shock value that is the tone that she goes for in her entire set, right? Because a lot of her stuff is about that tension. Here is something you don't expect me to be saying because I look and present myself this way. And I think also just with all the taboos and authority we're talking about, for women to talk about sex in a really straightforward, aggressive, I mean, I wrote a book about sleeping around and having a lot of relationships, and I always got back this feedback, oh, so you thought like a man. And I was like, no, actually, I didn't think like a man. I thought like an independent woman.
I know, what a strange concept.
Yeah.
Linda Michalski, is this a running theme in the women comedians that you profiled in your book?
I'm thinking about raunch. You mean
raunch aggression?
Oh, sure.
Because raunch is part of aggression, raunch, but it's not the only form of aggression.
Right. If you go back to think about authority or taking charge of the story, you know, I'm thinking about Athira's comment that you do stand up and you think, I am so not getting a date. This is this is not what men are looking for. And that's the whole promise of comedy. That's what makes it so interesting, that it is transgressive, that it does go against the grain. So, yeah, I think that if you think about the women that I'm dealing with, Wanda Sykes and Margaret Cho and Silverman and DeGeneres, I know all of them, you know, do outrageous things in their own way. And, you know, all of them are able to do that because it's funny. They can take advantage of comedy as a staging point to say, look, I can get away with saying something that's really outrageous, but also this is something you really need to hear. And I'm thinking about Wanda Sykes doing her whole thing about white people's looks at black people. And that's a really very sensitive thing that could be very hard to talk about. But when she does it,
I just think of her doing it and I laugh.
Oh, it's hilarious. She talks about the media presentations of Michelle Obama, and the racism, you know, that's right underneath those that media attention, and she's able to get away with it, and also she's able to get a lot of attention for it, and also to make really obvious what people might have thought, but might not have been able to talk about so directly. So yeah, I think this whole thing about aggression and being out of line, sure, it's what makes comedy so interesting, is what makes women's comedy so important, because to have women take that authority and do the non-feminine thing, to say the things that women aren't supposed to say, either because they're not nice or they're racy or they push, you know, towards they push in directions that women aren't supposed to be pushing about. Wow, how great the comedy gives us a chance to do that.
And also the idea that you're not up there to please.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
really,
that is interesting.
That's a huge thing.
Tell us the distinction. What you want to make people laugh, you want them to like you, but you're not out there to please.
You're not there to please because, you know, and it's a confidence thing, and it is really just a general, almost a presentation where you're up there and you are telling them, I'm not going on your journey, you're coming on mine. So it's not, I'm not going to be nice and make sure that you're okay. That should be actually what just happens in general as a prerequisite. But with a woman, you have to actually, a woman on stage, I feel like you have to kind of get through that barrier. It's like, okay, someone told me something very interesting, a voice teacher, about just using your voice as a woman. They're like, be careful of your register because people hear your voice and they will think of their nagging wife or their mother yelling at you.
Mm-hmm.
And just think about that. I mean, that's just me using my voice in a certain way, and that will be a turnoff. So you have to think about, you know, this modulation. It's very interesting. I mean, stuff again that you're like, wow, this is deep-seated, and it takes a lot of work. And I will say, I play in New York a lot, and for the most part, it rarely occurs to me that I am a woman on stage.
That's New York.
It's changed a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, the voice register thing, I know what you mean. I used to have a regular listener who apparently thought I smoked two packs of cigarettes a day and was a transvestite, as he or she would say. I can't remember, and I'd say, gee, thanks. You know, what are you gonna say to that? Can't knock that.
Yeah. No, and the other half of, you know, this conversation is you have to, I feel like if I thought about every single time I got on stage, this guy probably doesn't like, you know, there's a lot of guys that say, oh, I don't really like female comedy. And sometimes they'll pay you the greatest compliment. Every woman comedian's had this for after a show. The greatest compliment they can give you is, I don't usually like female comedy, but you were good.
What do you make of that? That someone would.
Thank you.
Well, I'm overwhelmed. Ophira, what do you make of that, though, that a guy would come up and say that?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I learned to accept very quickly that it's not unusual. First thing, yep. It is because, you know, a guy gets up on stage and it just seems exactly what everyone expects. So they are comfortable. They've seen this before. It is how they think about stand-up comedy. Sometimes when I do shows and people, the producers are talking about, all right, well, you know, and then this guy will come up and then the MC will pass it, just the logistics. Mm-hmm. There's never a female pronoun used because it's all thought of in that way. So then you get up on stage and you're unfortunately asking some of these people to have an open mind.
Michelle,
and to think differently.
Michelle in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Hi, Ann. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Well, I was calling because I noticed over the past couple of years, and I think it really started with Bridesmaids, but I noticed a kind of a difference when I'm watching shows, especially shows that are written by females or performed by female comics. I'm thinking like Broad City is a new show that Amy Poehler is an executive producer on. They laugh at different times than I do. And I just started noticing this, where it seems like some of the comedy is really, you know, pointed towards the female perspective. And I think it's hilarious. And they just kind of look at me and go, huh? So I didn't know if that's something that's come up, if we're just seeing, because, you know, female comics are becoming more prevalent, that the writing is kind of turning towards addressing both female and male sort of comic views.
Linda Myshefsky?
Well, you know, I think one of the things we're seeing is, as we see more women doing comedy, is that the topics are topics that women just know more about, that haven't been considered important or that haven't been considered the big deal. I mean, the whole concept of Bridesmaids, you know, is that it goes against the old romantic comedy tradition where the bride and the groom were the big story. And here's somebody saying, whoa, the Bridesmaids, that's also a story. Or the shower, you know, that shower scene is very funny. But I think it's funnier for women because we go to showers. Men don't go to bridal showers. So they didn't get a lot of the outrageous stuff that was happening there. So I think part of this is tapping women's experience, and that we laugh a lot when we see these things that we know about, but they just haven't been topics out there. People haven't talked about this a lot.
Ophira?
Yeah, and I also actually think in Bridesmaids, which you know, I love, just the idea that these complicated, loving, fraught relationships between two friends, best friends, that is also rarely talked about. You know, it's always sort of like, oh, these girls, they've known each other forever and they're just fine, and they sit down with a bottle of wine and hash it all out. and everything's great. But, you know, just that this has depth to it, and that's what one of the things I loved was exploring what friendship is all about.
And that movie I think that movie was interesting because there were a lot of jokes about how class and economics really make an impact on friendship. We never see that. We never see that in movies. And so, you know, women, I think, could very much identify with that. But, whoa, there's a very, once again, it was a very touchy issue that comedy could do really well.
Yeah. My guest, Linda Myshefsky, she's an OSU women's studies professor and author of a new book. It's called Pretty Funny: Women Comedians and Body Politics. That's what we're talking about today. My other guest on the phone, Ophira Eisenberg. She's a stand-up comedian, author, and host of NPR's Ask Me Another. Coming up, we'll hear from a local stand-up comedian, Laura Saunders. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We're talking about female comedians and the relationship between being beautiful and being funny. Still with us is OSU professor Linda Myshefsky. She's author of the new book, Pretty Funny: Women Comedians and Body Politics. And also on the phone is Ophira Eisenberg. She's a comedian, author, and host of NPR's Ask Me Another. Joining us now is a native Ohioan, a graphic designer by day, stand-up comedian by night, Laura Saunders. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi, thanks.
I was going to ask Ophira and decided to wait until you got on with us about whether or not those guys that come up after the show and say, I usually don't like women comedians, but you're different, if there is a generational factor to that, or if it tends to be, it doesn't matter how old they are.
I'm not sure with Ophir's experience, but with mine, it's strange because that it's a lot of people around my age. And it's even I've had females come up to me and say, you know, like, I know they hate all women. Go ahead, Ophir, what?
Oh, no, me too. That's crazy. I know when that happens, that is especially problematic.
I know when another woman's like, I hate women and what we all do, but you are an exception to the rule.
Yeah, how can that possibly make you feel good?
Yeah, exactly. We're like, thank you for hating what I'm trying, but liking me specifically.
What do you say?
in that moment, I actually want to say, I want you to repeat what you're saying and really listen to yourself.
Yes.
But, you know, they think they are paying you the best compliments of all time.
Yeah.
That's what I know. It's really disheartening. And all you can do, I think, I don't know what you do, but I just go, thanks. And walk away.
Pretty much. Yeah, like, oh, thank you.
Well, it's so bizarre because it suggests that women really aren't supposed to be doing this. I mean, that's the underlying, you know, like, I really don't, you know, I disapprove or, I, you know, it can't possibly work.
I don't agree with your lifestyle, but you are an exception to that lifestyle.
That's outrageous.
Laura, do you think...
I know.
Go ahead, Ophira.
I was going to say, can you imagine going up to... a person at an art gallery and being like, I usually despise female painters.
Yeah, is there anything but comedy left that you would think of? Well, there probably are a lot of things.
Yeah, WWE. I'm finding out from a lot of my male comedian friends that the women, the divas of the wrestling community are just getting famous now. So there's that as a nerd topic. But...
Laura, do you think much about gender when you're writing material?
I do in the sense that I've had many people mention to me, they're like, well, make sure your jokes are unisex. And I find it, I mean, and when I'm really feeling fussy about it, I'm like, well, that's not fair because men can just write and it's considered unisex, even if it's about their genitals. It's like, well, no, because everyone loves jokes about men's genitals. Yeah. And so it's one of those things of, I think I've tried to pay attention to it, but I try not to get caught up on it, that I want to write about my experience and my experience just happens to be female. So I'm hoping that people find that funny also.
And do you ever feel that you should write material that when you're writing and you know you're just writing about your life, but it may be challenging gender norms? Do you stop?
No.
Okay.
Because I think the stuff that's challenging is more funny. And so when you're taking stuff on stage, the stuff that maybe makes people a little uncomfortable is going to be a lot funnier than like, I'm going to go up there and just be polite as I can. And that's just going to be very boring.
Yes. Right, exactly. Ophira, another question I wanted to ask both of you is whether or not you see any change in over time as far as the men that you work with or that are going up on stage before or after you or whenever, do they feel self-conscious about their bodies, but it's just the audience doesn't feel it the same way?
No.
Okay.
The answer is no.
I keep trying to throw a bone out there, but you know.
There's a few male comedians I've met that do take, when we've done shows together, they take longer to get ready than I do. And I find that refreshing. They're trying to look fancy, too.
That is true. They come with, like, 10 dress shirts, and they're like,
yes,
look best on me.
And, like, a lot of lotion. I just feel like there's always a lot of lotion.
But, you know, it's, and which is with body type, I mean, guys of any body type can come on stage and talk about having dating, how it's going, or if it's going well, and no one will question the if it's true. They'll just be like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I can see it. But I feel like with women, they're like, are you sure you think you could have gotten that guy? Are you sure?
Yeah. That's why I'm glad you had this as a radio show. It's a lot more comfortable to talk about pretty and funny where it's like, you can't even see me.
We are online streaming live and we are on television live, but no, yeah. No pressure, yeah. Laura Sanders. We have an email from Barbara. She's directing it toward Linda, but I'm interesting in what the rest of you think as well. She says, do you think it is interesting that the three young women in Hot in Cleveland are so pretty and thin, typically beautiful, but most of the humor in the show would not work if it weren't for the old, somewhat baggy Betty White. In general, what part has Betty White played in this whole dynamic?
Wow, that is really a good question. It is such a funny show. And you're right, the women are, you know, try very hard to be very glamorous, and they are very thin. My gosh, they're all size twos. Then there's Betty White, who frequently has the best lines. And I think one of the things that I think it's a very contradictory show. One of the things that is, I think, so amazing about the show is that it shows that what you say can still be more important than what you look like. And that's the whole thing of comedy, isn't it? That, you know, what it is that you're talking about there on stage is really the content of the stuff. And so Betty White really delivers that. And frequently she's making fun of the femininity and the hang-ups of the women who are trying so hard to look like they're 30 when clearly they're pushing 50. But that is an interesting show and a good question.
What about people like Betty White? What kind of, not her specifically necessarily, but maybe her generation, Ophira, any influence on you?
Well, I think, every generation has had definitely an impact on the next. I watch these old roasts that thankfully you can find on YouTube with Phyllis Diller on them. And that's hysterical. And there is someone, when you talk about visually what she did to herself to try to, kind of create a character so the guys could feel at ease. Or at the time, what was considered like something that you would do. Because she was a very beautiful woman, but she dressed in these ridiculous, ugly outfits. Mm-hmm. So she could say this very shocking, subversive, smart stuff.
Mm-hmm. Laura Sanders?
I think too, I mean, Betty White is a specific example, is just, and this kind of goes back to the Hot in Cleveland thing about how comedy is an exercise in contrast. And so the fact that you have Betty White being this sweet old woman who then says, kind of the racy things or the controversial things. So just in the same, when you're writing, like, it's fun to play up that contrast, especially as a female comedian. You're like, they're expecting me to be nice. So it's nice when you decide not to go that route, how that's a little more shocking and you can use that to your advantage. Where, I don't know, if you came on stage looking like a villain and then acted like one, it would be like, okay, that's what we expected.
Peter in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Peter.
I really enjoy the program. It's something I find funny. I'd like to get your comments on the show Two Broke Girls. I'm as liberal as the next guy, but every once in a while, they'll come out with a joke and I'll kind of swallow. What do you think of their comedy?
I unfortunately can't weigh in. I have not seen the show Two Broke Girls, so I will have to.
Are you familiar with it, Ophira?
To be honest with you, I've watched maybe a couple episodes, and that is not because of the show. It's because I don't watch a lot of television.
Yeah.
I know, groundbreaking. so I can't speak to it, but I think I kind of know what you're talking about a little bit, and I think that there's a. It's interesting because I've been told that movie, that show has a lot of really, it does a little play on the shock value a little bit, and that they are pushing the envelope here and there. And it might be a little uncomfortable. Your comment has made me want to watch that show.
Yeah, I'm actually curious about it, too. But they're certainly not. By the way, Peter, thank you for that call, because we were talking about Sarah Silverman earlier. I mean, she's can be gross. She's not the only one out there that can be, but she's proven that it can be funny and successful.
I think a huge difference is just the skill in the writing, because I think when male or female, when someone goes, down a gross topic or a vulgar topic, there's the difference between someone who's like, I took this topic and then I wrote something funny about it, versus someone that's more like the toddler that learned how to say a bad word, where they're like, I said this into a microphone and now you're all going to laugh because you're uncomfortable.
Right.
And there's a huge difference. And you can just tell just on how funny something is. Sarah Silverman is a woman who is an excellent writer. And so she can pull off that vulgar stuff, versus some people are known as like shock comics because they're just willing to say horrible things out loud that are not written well.
Justin in Chillicothe, welcome.
Hi. I guess my question was very similar to the last caller's. I was just curious what your thoughts were on the double standard that seems to exist between male comedians and female, like kind of with Joan Rivers and what she said, and sort of she refused to apologize, which I don't agree with what she said, but I feel like if it had been a man, she might not have had the backlash that she has, and what your thoughts were about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Ophira Eisenberg?
Yes. I assume that there wouldn't be the same backlash. And I do, that's another word that I was going to say earlier, which is the absence of shame sometimes in female comedy is pretty subversive and shocking, because they want you to, the general idea is you would feel terrible about speaking out or about talking about sex in a certain way, or just having an opinion that is not going to be equal to something polite or mainstream acceptable. And the fact that you would have to feel shame would be what people would expect. So the fact that she was like, no, I'm not apologizing, was really just keeping, it's consistent. And that's why I applauded her. I was like, the difficult subject matter, but I applaud you because that is what you have to do to stay your ground.
And that is very hard, Linda Michaevsky, for women culturally.
Oh, sure.
Well, apologize.
Yeah,
that I
exactly.
want to please you.
And yeah, think about our conversation before about women's voices. Our voices are supposed to be low and pleasing. And so, you know.
But not too low and not too pleasing.
Exactly. Yeah. Or then we get into too authoritative. And
whoa.
Soft. I think soft. Maybe that was it. Soft.
Right.
Soft and pleasing. So I think it's more difficult for women to get away with saying things that are controversial or aggressive or bold or raunchy. You know, all those things are just going to be judged more harshly. And you're right, Anne. It's a bigger cultural thing about expectations of women compared to expectations of men.
But I think you brought up a good point, too, which is if there is a lot of comedy that we are able to take advantage of because of this. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that you're like, I really wish that this would be different and things would feel more progressive and equal, you can use it somewhat to your advantage because you can use that tension in your comedy.
There is a small part of me that feels very bad for just like, white dude, middle, like just like middle America comedians. Because I'm like, what do you even talk about? Like, the rest of their lives are way easier, but on comedy, it's a little bit harder, I think, sometimes for them.
Right. Every premise has been covered.
Yes. Like, we know what a white dude's life is like.
which is interesting because, you know, you wrote about Wanda Sykes too, Linda, in the book. And as you mentioned, body politics are even more complex for women of color.
Absolutely.
And how to play off of that.
Yeah, and if you think about
they get to be women, they're women of color, they have a lot to riff
on. Oh, yeah, there is. And you know, Sykes is a really good example of, you know, someone who really takes advantage of that. But also think about how, if you think about the pretty funny dynamic and how women are pretty or they're funny. Pretty in American culture almost always means white. Or if it means a woman of color, it's a woman of color with very Caucasian features and light skin. So the fact that people like Wanda Sykes and Margaret Cho are making fun of this, you know, or pulling this to our attention, I think is great. You know, once again, they're going out there and saying, isn't it obvious? let's take a look at what exactly we think of is pretty, and what do we think is attractive?
Mm-hmm. So Ophira Eisenberg, you broke some, I guess, something of a glass ceiling as host of NPR's Ask Me Another. You know, I was kind of wondering what they were going to do with late night television. They went pretty predictable, not bad, but pretty predictable. So far, status quo there, but you're the host of a game show, Ask Me Another.
Yes, a trivia show, something that is seen as very male, actually.
Right. Mm-hmm. And did they talk to you about your gender when they hired you for that?
No, I will say this is the only thing they said, and there's a few women producers on the show, and they wanted to find a woman as a host, basically to have a different, you know, they were like, that'd be nice. Nobody's doing that. Wouldn't that be a great thing to do, to have a different voice and find a funny woman to host a trivia show? Like, this will actually be something different, which I was hear someone say something like that and then go out there and try to, you know, audition people. And I was lucky enough to get the job. But I do find that it's great because out of nowhere, I have so many women that come up to me either after the live taping or get in touch with me through social media. And they have really hooked on to that, and they are very thankful, and they really like the show because they hear themselves or they hear a woman, and it was very endearing to them. And I feel like that is worth everything.
And they don't say, I normally hate female trivia hosts, but you were
when
great.
When I hear trivia from a female, I just assume I'm already wrong.
So it's a cakewalk. So, Ophira Eisenberg, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ophira Eisenberg, she's a stand-up comedian, author, and host of NPR's Ask Me Another. Also, Laura Sanders, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Where are you appearing next?
I'll be actually, my next big show is a all-female show at Shadowbox Live on May 13th. It's a Mother's Day show, so that should be a fun one.
Very, very apropos. Laura Sanders, thanks for joining us. Mm-hmm. And Linda Michaevsky, thank you for joining us as well.
This was fun.
Linda Michalski, she's an Ohio State University women's studies professor and author of a new book called Pretty Funny, Women Comedians and Body Politics. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.